From Washington, this is Daybreak Asia. Good morning, I'm Jim Stevenson. Coming up, China investigates former powerful security chief. Taiwan preparing new air safety measures after crash. India and the United States look to reset ties with a visit by John Kerry. These stories and more in this Wednesday edition of VOA's Daybreak Asia. China has announced it is investigating a man who used to be one of the country's most powerful politicians, former domestic security chief Zhou Yongkang. The investigation is likely to boost already growing public support for Chinese President Xi Jinping's widening anti-corruption drive. VOA's Bill Ide has more from Beijing.
A brief announcement of the decision came late Tuesday from China's Xinhua news agency. In its report, Xinhua said the party's top investigating body, the Central Commission for Discipline Inspection, had begun an investigation into Zhou Yongkang's suspected serious disciplinary violations. Hong Kong University of Science and Technology political scientist David Zweig says the decision to go after Zhou is perhaps the biggest investigation since the Gang of Four at the end of the Cultural Revolution.
This is a really big deal. Many people would worry that if you can go after members of the Politburo Standing Committee after they've stepped down, then many people would be vulnerable.
For months, China has been anticipating the announcement of an investigation into Zhou Yongkang. Since late last year, there have been numerous unconfirmed reports in foreign media that Zhou was the focus of a corruption probe. But when an official announcement did not come in March, when the Communist Party held top-level meetings in Beijing, some began to question Chinese President Xi Jinping's commitment to stamping out corruption. The Communist Party says it is in a life-or-death struggle against corruption, a problem that not only threatens the party and state, but also prospects for much-needed reform. Zweig says that while Mr. Xi most likely needed to get a lot of people to agree with the decision to go forward with the investigation, it is easy to understand why it is necessary. Zhou is a classic example of someone who had too much power, he says.
He had so much political and legal power, being the head of the legal affairs leadership group of the Communist Party. I mean, he just was in an enormously powerful position to be able to do what he wanted. When you've got that kind of power over police, courts, who gets shot, who gets executed, that's just an enormous amount of power in a totally untransparent system.
Although the announcement of the party's investigation into Zhou marks a big step forward, it is not necessarily a guarantee that he could face criminal charges, says Hong Kong Baptist University political scientist Jean-Pierre Cabestan.
In China, it's up to the party to decide whether a case should be transferred to the judiciary or should be dealt with within the party apparatus. If there are serious crimes suspected of having been committed by Zhou Yongkang, which is likely, the case will probably be transferred to the judiciary. If not, it will be dealt with within the party.
Zhou is a close ally of former rising political star Bo Xilai, who was sentenced to life in jail last year. Zhou rose up within China's ranks, serving in several key posts that contributed to his power and influence and that are also likely to be key focuses of the corruption investigation. He previously served as the head of the state-owned China National Petroleum Corporation and as a Sichuan Provincial Party secretary. Sichuan Province and CNPC have already been shaken by corruption investigations, many into individuals closely linked to Zhou. While Zhou served as China's security chief, overseeing domestic intelligence, paramilitary police, judges, and prosecutors, the country's domestic security budget began outpacing spending for national defense. Bill Ide, VOA News, Beijing.
The way Chinese students use the internet at home could affect how they adapt to living in the United States. Stay tuned as Daybreak Asia looks at an unusual and fascinating study. In Taiwan, where last week's plane crash in bad weather killed 48 people, the country's aviation authority is following through on orders from the president to draft a series of new air safety rules. The measures, as outlined so far, would cover the age of aircraft, extended airport closures during stormy weather, and the visibility of runways. Ralph Jennings for VOA in Taipei has details.
Taiwan President Ma Ying-jeou has asked his cabinet to strengthen commercial flight safety after a twin-engine prop jet operated by Taiwan-based TransAsia Airways crashed near the main airport in the outlying Penghu Islands. The plane with 58 aboard crashed and caught fire last Wednesday on its second attempt to land. Lin Junliang, leader of the Civil Aeronautics Administration's Air Safety Standards Group, expects a tightening of at least four existing rules to answer the president's demands. He says that every department is busy with the aftermath of the plane crash and matters related to the families of victims, and coordinating that with a series of specific measures that follow the president's order. Lin says one measure would be to close airports more often than normal internationally because of typhoons and thunderstorms. Officials from the 63-year-old TransAsia Airways believe weather caused the crash just after dark on Wednesday, and they apologize for it. About 200 flights had been canceled that day because of Typhoon Matmo as it crossed over Taiwan. But as the storm moved on to China, other flights had been able to operate. The aviation authority has not determined a cause for the crash, which also injured 10 people as the plane went down in a narrow alley between rows of old houses outside the airport. Lin says requirements for pilot skills may be tightened along with rules on the use of older aircraft. The TransAsia plane was about 14 years old, within today's legal limit. Lin adds that runways in places such as the two in Penghu's main airport may be too hard for pilots to see when visibility is reduced by weather. The runways may be redesigned to meet international standards. Taiwan averaged 1,238 flights per day in the first half of the year. Its last deadly commercial airline accident took place in 2002 when a China Airlines plane exploded shortly after takeoff, killing 225 people. Lin expects the new standards easily to gain support from Taiwan's seven commercial airlines and other government departments. They could take effect within a week. Ralph Jennings, VOA News, Taipei.
India and the United States will attempt to reset their ties during an upcoming visit by U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry. As Anjana Pasricha reports from New Delhi, this week's talks will be the first high-level interaction between the two countries since a right-wing government led by Prime Minister Narendra Modi took charge.
For months, India-U.S. ties have grabbed headlines for the wrong reasons. Washington's denial of a visa to the Hindu nationalist leader, who is now India's prime minister, and an ugly spat over an Indian diplomat's arrest in New York last December. But the mood is more positive as India's Bharatiya Janata Party government prepares to host U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry for the fifth India-U.S. strategic dialogue, which will begin later this week. The issue of the visa denial was set at rest after Mr. Modi's election, when the U.S. government reached out to him and invited him to visit Washington in September. A professor at New Delhi's Jawaharlal Nehru University, Chintamani Mahapatra, recalls that the foundation for a closer India-U.S. relationship was laid by a previous BJP government 15 years ago. He expects Mr. Modi, who is widely regarded as a pragmatic leader, to do the same.
Again, the BJP is in power. They have a history behind it. So they will improve relationship with the USA with the sole aim of bettering India's defense and economic capabilities and political credibility.
Indian leaders are expected to pitch for more U.S. investment and trade as they look to restore the economy to a high growth path. However, Manoj Joshi at the Observer Research Foundation in New Delhi points out that persisting disputes between the two countries over issues such as trade, protectionism and patents pose as roadblocks.
The Indian expectations are basically on the development front, because I think the focus of the Modi government is really on the issue of economic development. And as you know, right now, kind of India and the U.S. have a certain number of problems with regard to the WTO and issues of IPR, etc. So I think certainly the Indian side would expect would be expecting that the U.S. can be more helpful in those areas.
Observers like Professor Mahapatra remain optimistic. He says such differences exist between the best of partners.
These are going to be part of the process. They are not going to halt, they are not going to break the relationship, but rather they will be part of the challenges that the two countries need to sort it out through dialogues of the kind that John Kerry is going to hold.
In India, concerns are also running high that the withdrawal of international combat troops from Afghanistan could lead to a spike in terrorist violence in the region. Manoj Joshi says this is a potential problem for a government that is stressing the need for security in South Asia.
India has certain regional aspirations, certain regional policy, which the Modi government has been very active on. I think certainly when it comes to countries like Pakistan and Afghanistan, the government of India would appreciate a U.S. policy which could promote stability in the region.
The venue for the India-U.S. strategic dialogue was shifted from Washington to New Delhi to give American officials an opportunity to meet top leaders of the BJP government. Most observers expect that the dialogue to be held Thursday will give some momentum to the relationship, but do not expect any quick progress. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Vietnamese consumers are boycotting Chinese-made products. Find out more coming up on Daybreak Asia. We wish you a very good Wednesday morning, and it's the day that we like to look at education. As the number of Chinese students coming to the United States to attend college continues to swell, there's more information available that describes problems many of these students are having adapting to life in the United States. A new study examines one possible reason for those problems, the way many Chinese students are using the internet before they leave China. Daybreak Asia's Ira Melman spoke with one of the authors of that study. Jude Michael is assistant research professor in the Department of Psychology at the University of Utah.
One of the things that we're sort of finding with Chinese students is that what they're using the internet to do is to sort of select their university, assist in sort of selecting the course of study. But one of the things that we're finding that students really aren't doing very much is sort of undertaking any sort of cultural learning programs to sort of assist them in their understanding of America and of American culture and of sort of more American styles of interaction. So what students are doing, actually, rather than looking for opportunities to sort of connect to America and American students, is that they're actually looking to student rosters and Google groups to find other Chinese students. And one of the things that they're doing is looking for ways in which they can connect to other Chinese students who have sort of blazed this trail ahead of them.
What is the effect on this when they get here to the United States and enroll in school?
You know, research has sort of shown that there are differences in the ways that Chinese or Asian cultures and American cultures sort of exchange support. And one thing that Chinese students sort of tend to rely on is a more sort of implicit support. The knowledge that support is there, the knowledge that they're part of a larger group. And so where Americans tend to exchange support very openly and ask for an exchange sort of very personal, emotional information, that's really not how it's done. And what we're finding is with Chinese students that, you know, whereas this could be a great springboard into American culture, not everybody is able to do that, and not everybody ends up maintaining that goal over the whole time that they're in the United States.
Is your hope that possibly some education officials or even parents in Chinese get a hold of this information and perhaps, you know, suggest that the students to be do this, accomplish this type of changeover to open themselves up to the U.S. culture even before they leave their home country in China?
I think so. I think, you know, a couple of things that students could do, in my opinion, and, you know, I have to be careful about what I comment on from sort of an expert point of view and sort of what I comment on from a previous study abroad participant point of view. But now that you have the information available, now that you have the internet bringing a lot of American culture into your home, I wouldn't necessarily limit myself to things like American movies and American, you know, try doing things like, you know, looking for your house, you know, prior to going abroad. Find out, you know, what, you know, don't necessarily look to the Google groups and don't necessarily look to the Renren type of social media, but see if you can find things on Craigslist. See if you can sort of start making some of that initial contact from China. Look and see if you can find, you know, information on interactional styles and those types of things. And then, yeah, I think I would love it if some university officials could sort of get a hold of this, and rather than doing, you know, cultural training programs that focus primarily on news media and stories of what are, you know, what's going on in the United States, where I think they tend to sort of exaggerate certain elements of American culture. I think what would be great is if they could, you know, sort of take some of those cultural training programs and help the students focus on interactional styles.
Aren't you talking about a very difficult instilled cultural framework that the Chinese students have anyway?
I am, and it would be very difficult for the Chinese students, but I would also challenge the Chinese students by saying, isn't that why you're coming to the United States to begin with? A part of it is to learn English. Part of it is that cultural immersion. You know, there are plenty of programs where you can go where your goal is to learn English and you can be with a lot of international students taking English courses and that's it. But if your goal is cultural integration, I think part of it is that cultural immersion and that cultural learning. And part of your learning American culture would be to sort of adapt your method of interaction so that you can reach out to American students and so that you can learn what it is that drew you to America in the first place.
Jude Michael is assistant research professor in the Department of Psychology at the University of Utah. He was speaking with Daybreak Asia's Ira Melman. China recently pulled an oil rig from an area of the disputed South China Sea that Vietnam also claims. Despite the action, the incident has had a lingering effect on consumers in Vietnam. VOA's Rise Poach reports from Hanoi on an effect, or rather an effort, to boycott Chinese products.
The shelves in this Vietnamese store, like most stores around the country, are filled with Chinese-made products, but much of it may go unsold for now, with many Vietnamese consumers still angry over the recent oil rig dispute. Like she does every year, Phu Lan Hương is taking her children to purchase school supplies. This time, she says, she will only purchase Vietnamese products.
China has already withdrawn its oil rig, but my initial thought is, we are Vietnamese. We have to buy Vietnamese products.
Vietnamese people give priority to Vietnamese goods is part of an ongoing nationwide campaign to promote nationalism. In May, China placed a drilling platform in disputed waters near the Paracel Islands. The location of the oil exploration led to clashes between Chinese ships and Vietnamese fishing boats. Mai Mai, a college student in Hanoi, says she still uses products made in China, but won't buy new ones.
After this incident, there are so many slogans in the internet, like stop using Chinese goods or something like this. So many Vietnamese people did try to put their Chinese things away.
China was Vietnam's largest trade partner in 2013, with bilateral trade worth $50.21 billion. According to the government in Hanoi. I'm Rise Poach, VOA News, Hanoi.
Despite government controls, the Vietnamese media industry is evolving as it faces growing competition from digital content. One website has come up with an innovative way to woo young audiences by rapping the news. Marianne Brown reports from Hanoi.
So far, there have been 17 bi-monthly editions of Rap News Plus, mostly published via video sharing platforms. On YouTube, some editions have been viewed over 500,000 times. While the latest is a special sports edition to celebrate the end of the World Cup, most include news events covered in the rest of the Vietnamese media. Vietnam Plus editor Lê Quốc Minh says he came up with the idea when trying to find a way to make news appealing to people aged 13 to 25, a demographic which he says has lost interest in current affairs.
We need to bring in something new, something interesting, something funny. But the way we select topics and the way we present it, it's serious enough. Mm-hmm. So I bring the seriousness to the young people, using their own language, using their own taste, their own music. And that's my concept.
One of the catchiest editions was published at the height of tensions with China, following the deployment of an oil rig in waters also claimed by Vietnam. Phổ Việt Phương, 25, is one of the three rappers involved.
I make it, I cut the chorus of this and people up it to my SoundCloud and then people download it for the ringtone.
While rapping the news is not entirely new, it is certainly a novelty in Vietnam, particularly because Vietnam Plus operates under the umbrella of the official Vietnam news agency, VNA, which is known for its conservative approach. In Vietnam, according to law, every publication has to have some kind of institutional sponsor. But instead of calling the media government-controlled, it is more accurate to say government-licensed, says David Brown, a former US diplomat and Vietnam expert.
In many cases, particularly, as I say, in the case of the two dozen dailies and a handful of magazines, serious magazines that are also make a profit, the relationship is with the sponsor is only nominal.
That said, there are restrictions on what can and cannot be discussed. Editors are given weekly guidance and occasional punishment if they are too slow to follow instructions on no-go things, he adds. Most newspapers depend on a government subsidy of some sort and pretty much colour within the lines, he says. However, those publications which are profit-making are more likely to push boundaries.
In general, as you would expect of any publications which are essentially profit-making, they're looking at ways to cater to the things their audiences want to read. And they are interesting, even if there are no-go areas, such as, shall we say, a profound discussion of the relations between the Vietnamese and Chinese Communist parties or something like that.
At the moment, Rap News Plus does not make a profit. Ming and his team cover the costs of making the videos, but the rappers do not get paid. Ming says he wants to make money, but his priority is to maintain journalistic integrity.
We have to respect our listener. We're talking about the news, not the brands. Even if they bring us the money, but we cannot accept this kind of money.
Rap News Plus is not pushing boundaries with content, but the format is a groundbreaking step for the Vietnamese journalism industry. The challenge now will be to keep it new and fresh for fickle young fans. This is Marianne Brown for VOA News in Hanoi.
Well, while VOA may not be ready to wrap the news, we don't want you going away with the blues. We hope you continue having a great morning. The latest world news is next with Steve Norman. I'm Jim Stevenson. Thanks for joining us today on Daybreak Asia. Thank you. VOA podcasts are a convenient way to get your information on the run.
VOAnews.com.
Visit VOAnews.com and click on podcasts to learn how you can subscribe.